Welcome to Gleaming the Tube, the podcast where Kevin and Mike watch a film in which somebody rides a skateboard at some point. Finally, a podcast where people talk about movies.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kevin.
1989's Shredder Orpheus, written by, directed by, and starring Robert McGinley, is a dystopian science fiction skateboard retelling of the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, and it's exactly as good as that description makes it sound. And Michael and I watched this movie.
Wait, man, I watched the fucking shit out of this movie. Like, what a movie. I did. One of my favorite things is to watch. It's very hard to do nowadays, but I do love going into a movie totally cold and not knowing anything about it. I remember I saw the movie Election that way. I knew nothing about it. Just went to the theater, picked a movie, saw it, and was, of course, delighted by the movie Election.
I had a really great experience like that with the movie Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson. Like that. Seeing that cold was fantastic.
Yeah, right. Like, what is happening? Another ScarJo movie that I saw exactly like that was Lucy. We went to see Lucy, and I was like, what's this about? And then it was just, like, fucking bonkers. But this movie, on the other hand, was – I was really impressed by it. Like, knowing nothing about it going in and just – watching it was like, did a 12-year-old write this? And why? It's a terrible movie, but it's terrible in a way that movies can't be anymore.
No.
Like, it was just confusing, and it was like they were just making things up as they were going along, and there was a legitimate amount of skateboarding in it. And I think the thing that made me, you know, so I was, of course, I'm watching it like, what the fuck is this piece of shit? But I just, you know, I saw it through to the end and just imagined how amazing I would have thought it was if I was 13. Like, if I saw the movie when it came out, I would have been blown away by it. But then, of course, you know, you do a little looking around on the internet, and you find out it was like this completely independently made film in like Seattle before grunge, and everyone in it is just his fucking friends, and they just like all the locations they just kind of barged it and did it mostly illegally. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Fucking great. It was
for something that was made like by sheer force of will.
Yeah. Some dude just wrote a movie about a skateboarding guitar hero and just made the movie, and I was like, you know what, great. It was fantastic, kind of in that way that just was, I was like cheering for it when it ended. I was like, good for you guys.
I had also never heard of this movie until recently. Yeah. And it is streaming nowhere.
Yeah,
there is a Blu-ray, so I think I got the Blu-ray and then I shared it with you because when I heard about it, I was like, well, we have to do this for the podcast.
Right.
This is a science fiction skateboard retelling of Orpheus and Eurydice. Like, how we would be derelict in our duty.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad I watched it. And like I said, the more I read about it, I had never, you know, I love skateboarding. I've never heard of this movie in my life.
And I love weird movies.
Yeah.
I love, like, kind of weird, obscure, like, how did this get made movies? And I had never heard of this.
I felt that this, in fact, while I was watching it, I wanted to remember to say that this movie had a very, we watched this at Pete and Steph's apartment quality to it.
I was going to say there are like echoes of Richard Elfman's Forbidden Zone.
Yes.
In this. The only difference is I think the people who made Forbidden Zone were like way more talented. Like, you know, you had Danny Elfman doing the music and playing the devil. And I think it's the difference between like an LA movie and a Seattle movie.
Yeah, sure.
Because Forbidden Zone is a much, much better movie. But it has that same kind of weird homemade, me and all the people I know are going to make a weird fucking movie thing to it.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because some of the stuff, like some of the costuming and some of the makeup, like all the EBN, mm-hmm. people like, I was like legitimately like that guy, you know, the guy who looked like Sue Catwoman.
Yes.
I was like, that looks pretty goddamn sinister. Like that's some pretty cool shit right there. But yeah, I was also then because of course I finished the movie and I was like, okay, who were the skaters? Just fucking local Seattle skaters, like doing a damn good job. Like at that scene at the end where they have their skull of Orpheus skate jam on the half pipe. I was kind of like, shit, these guys can fucking skate. And the guy doing the freestyle skating in front of the band while they were playing, I was like, this is legitimately some 1989 quality skateboarding going on here. And they were just local fucking dudes. I thought that was pretty rad.
I really like that. I did think, you know, it's weird. Like a lot of the shots are sort of like, let me place the camera in the most boring spot possible.
Yes.
And we won't light anything.
Right. But it made it funny because when occasionally there was a couple of cool shots, like when he after he skates the garage, when he goes back to the EBN, you know, there's that really actually cool shot where like he's in the foreground and just like you see a match light way in the I was like, oh, well, that was a good shot. Yeah. So there was one good shot in the
probably
movie.
Like while making the movie, they sort of picked up on like, oh, well, what if we did this?
Right. Well, right.
We don't just stick the camera with a wide shot and have everything play out. So, you know, I sort of mentioned this in the little intro, but the movie basically starts with a bunch of people living in a dystopian future. There's an evil television network called EBN that's run by Hades and Persephone. That's a television network, but it's also hell. And there's Orpheus, who reminds me of like a Bruce McCullough Kids in the Hall character with the way he acts most of the time. Absolutely. Where he's like, can you believe that I have to go to hell to rescue my girlfriend? Is that fucked or what?
What the fuck, man?
Like, I think at one point he literally says, like, nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. Guess I'll go eat worms. Don't ever do that. That's all I'm saying. Like, it genuinely felt like a Kids in the Hall sketch.
Yeah,
come to
yeah.
life, which I didn't hate. And, you know, so he falls in love with Eurydice, and then, like, she gets pulled into the underworld / the TV network. It doesn't, like, make the most literal sense. And then Orpheus has to descend into the underworld to save her, and there's a deal, like, much like in the myth, Hades says that Eurydice can leave with Orpheus if Orpheus doesn't look behind him when leaving the television network / underworld. And of course he does. And she's trapped down there. And the movie doesn't really end there, which I found interesting too.
Right. I felt like every scene had no memory of the scene that preceded it. Like there was no... like it felt very much like they would finish a shot and be like, okay, what should we do next? Let's have them skate in a parking garage.
Yeah, and I did feel like that, like, in order to access the underworld, you almost have to, like, skate to an elevator. And that had kind of a weird dreamlike quality that I'm not sure was intentional, but which I sort of liked.
Right.
The EBN is called, like, is the Euthanasia Broadcast Network, which is some kind of limp satire about, like, the television is taking over your mind. We're all zombies watching the TV. And I did feel like usually with a movie this low budget that sort of has a countercultural basis, they will go all in on sort of being transgressive and pushing limits. And this movie doesn't really do that. It's sort of like the satire doesn't really get any deeper than people watching television or zombies.
Right. Well, and it felt like that's why I was trying to embody like the 13-year-old version of me who would have been like, oh shit, like the TV's sucking the life out of people. And yeah, but you're right. It's like the minute you turn 14, you would be like, oh, there's not much. This is kind of toothless, you know? But man, like if I was trying to imagine myself stumbling across this movie on like, you know, like cable when I was like, you know, 13 years old and being like, it was amazing.
I could maybe see this showing up on Night Flight.
Yeah, yeah.
This has sort of had a bit of a second life at things like the Alamo Drafthouse Trash Night.
Right.
We'll like discover this movie and show it. But like, I don't think it's gotten a lot of TV broadcast, which is why you and I had never heard of it. And it's, you know, there's a lot of weird choice in this. One character just whispers through the whole movie for no reason.
For no apparent reason.
The one who was like injured in war just shouts throughout the movie. There's a special lyre instrument invented by Jimi Hendrix that makes the world turn into bad video toaster effects. It's really strange.
It's a lot.
There's a lot of like when he's in the underworld, there's a lot of sort of intercom announcements mentioning various like cabinet members of the Reagan administration, which again goes back to the satire of like, yeah, Al Haig's in hell. And, you know, I would only know these. I only know these names from Bloom County comic strips.
Exactly. Right. I was surprised at the lack of a reference of Casper Weinberger.
Yes. Or Bloom County comic strips and or Dead Kennedys songs.
Yeah, right. There's a Venn diagram there. And
So I threw the lyre.
Put a nice sized dent in his magical skateboard.
Because, you know, the performances in this are generally not great. I did find, like you said, some of the people in the underworld are overacting to the point that they're fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
In general, you know how I am a fan of these kind of pretentious immersive theater shows that I kind of go on about?
That you are, Kevin.
The hell sequence reminded me of, like, what that is like when it's done very, very poorly. Like, I've gone to bad immersive theater shows and I'm like, this is kind of like one of those where there's a room just full of paper mache cut up, and then you go into a videotape room and you interact with what are supposed to be your parents, and then there's a TV set and you're supposed to perform on it. Like, it reminded me of that. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping that there would be better music in this movie. Like, even coming out of like that Seattle underground scene, like, you know, there's no Poison Idea.
Right. Soundtrack. It was all very much, I have a synthesizer and I can put together a little soundtrack score, but yeah, it's there wasn't much.
Like,
to
you
it.
Would hope they would get some Seattle bands from that era, or even like Northwest bands to get some songs on it. Like, I think that would have been really good. I thought it was interesting. The trailer sort of tried to posit this movie as like a capstone of a trilogy, where it was sort of like, first there was thrashing, and then we gleamed the cube, and now Shredder Orpheus, which I don't think this is spoken of in the same breath as those other two.
I've never heard of it. You know, like, it certainly did failed to make an impression even on the skateboarding world, because I kind of want to see if I could go back into like some back issues of Thrasher and around the time and see if it gets even just the most minimal mention, because I've never heard of it.
I really liked when one character said, you want to join the pantheon of dead skate rock guitar heroes? That's your choice. I was like, that's some dialogue right there.
Yeah, that was written and then acted.
You get to be queen for a day in 4.5 minutes. Like, there's a lot of strange, scary elevator guy, corporate mind control through the television.
Yes.
Like you said, the best thing about this movie is the skateboarding, and everything else is sort of inept, but in kind of a charming way.
Because it's so it's like, it looks like a first pass. Every like the dialogue that was written first try, great, nailed it. Everything's a first take.
Like hearing the story behind the movie, it's sort of like, it is a triumph that it was finished.
Yes. Yeah.
And put together, and it makes like the very loosest sort of sense. Like, I imagine they had a really fun time making this.
Right. They were all hanging out, being friends. I actually really liked the set piece when he was like kind of walking through the halls and everything was covered in shredded paper. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, somebody committed to that. Like somebody shredded a shitload of paper and filled a weird, I don't know, like some office space with it. And I was like, all right, good.
Yeah, it seemed like a disused office space with fluorescent lighting.
Yes.
Which is probably what hell is.
You sure? I mean, if it's as close as I've ever seen, frankly.
I guess because like I had a few years ago, I saw the musical theater production of Hadestown, which is this exact same story, only sort of told in a New Orleans jazz style. And I really liked Hadestown, the musical. Like, I think it's a great musical. And I'm not the world's biggest musical fan, but I really liked Hadestown. Because I think Hadestown dealt with, in terms of Orpheus and Eurydice, like, why we tell these stories over and over again, and why certain myths endure and why certain myths don't. And I really liked that in terms of themes that Shredder Orpheus does not get close to. But back to this movie, which is not as good.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there an EBN in Providence?
I was going to mention that. In Providence, EBN was sort of an electronic, they were, it's like sort of a music group and sort of like a video art installation group where they would do electronic music, but they would also release videos that were kind of these electronic compilations with a lot of samples and a lot of news clips. And it would sort of be like, you'd sample George Bush saying like, "Read my lips. This is a new kind of war." And, you know, you'd put that to a dance beat. They would do a lot of that. Or I remember there was one, it was Harrison Ford and Patriots game screaming "Get Down."
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And so they'd be over and over again to like a dance beat. I think that their names were Pearson and Post, because they also had a public access cable show called Takamo TV where they play some of this stuff. And I don't think they ever broke outside of Providence, but I think for a while they were kind of a big deal in Providence because it was very interesting stuff that not a lot of people.
Right.
That not a lot of people were doing stuff like that. Like, we'd go to those raves that our friends would put on in Providence, like a rave called Quest.
Yes.
And sometimes at those, there would be like, and now EBN will do a video installation. And
right. It'd be like a wall of TVs. Now, yeah. Didn't they also do some work with you two on the Zoo TV tour? Am I remembering that correctly?
Did. I think you two hired them to do some of the production for Zoo TV. So, you know, I'm lying where they didn't break outside of, but like, I don't think people outside of Providence know EBN.
I think
people outside of Providence went to the Zoo TV tour and were like, "Ooh, look at these cool video things."
Right.
It was really kind of ahead of its time stuff. I was super into it. And there were, you know, because it said EBN here, and because this looks like a public access show, it definitely brought that back for me. Like, I have no idea where my EBN VHS tapes are. But.
Right. Well, the minute I saw it, I knew so little about the movie that the minute I saw it, I was like, wait a minute. And apparently there is no connection. But I remember when the beginning stages of the rave scene happened, it was like EBN already existed and seemed perfectly retrofit.
Yes.
To do what they were doing. So it was like, yeah, you'd go to those parties and there would be a big wall of televisions and they would, you know, do crazy.
And we must stress here, by the time there were raves in Providence, Rhode Island, I'm sure they were in New York and London.
Oh, yes.
Far beforehand. But by the time you could go to a rave in Providence, Rhode Island, it was suddenly like.
Kevin, it was Manchester. Then Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence is the Manchester of the Northeast, I'd have to say.
Of Rhode Island.
The Manchester of Rhode Island.
Fucking A.
I think that's our show.
If you can get your hands on a copy of this movie, by all means, fucking watch it.
Thank you for listening. Our website is gleamingthetube.net. We're on Facebook at Gleaming the Tube, and our email is gleamingpod@gmail.com. Production assistance by Liam Gray. Music by Kissing Contest. Skateboarding is not a crime.
I admit, like, it took me a few minutes to kind of just like, okay, this, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna just watch this and allow it to be kind of terrible. And what, you know, once your mindset is right, I was like, yeah, man, this is great. Good for them. They made a fucking terrible movie.
I sat down to watch it, and Emily was with me, and 10 minutes in, she was like, you're on your own, man. Upstairs.
Similar situation. It was like, what the fuck is this? All right. Yeah.